After. 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 After.
under the Reagan administration turned violent against the state in 1983 at a moment of executive sort of executive acceptance. And because of that, this is we shouldn't think that the wink and the nod coming from the Trump administration might mean that these activists will be content with simply demonstrating in the public square.
Professor, I wanted to ask you, you talk about this movement as really beginning to form and organize itself post-Vietnam. But how would you classify those right-wing or white supremacist movements that really developed in the 50s during the civil rights movement, all the bombings that occurred throughout the South? I'm thinking specifically in 62, the huge riot in Oxford, Mississippi, where there were actually pitched gun battles between federal marshals and white supremacists attempting to prevent James Meredith from entering Ole Miss. Could you talk about the relationship between that prior 50s movement to then what developed during the Vietnam War era?
Sure. What we see in the 1950s is the third era of the Ku Klux Klan. People think about the post-Civil War Klan, the 1920s, and then the 1950s. And it is classically organized in the way that many people understand Klan violence. The Third Klan is mostly in the South. It is mostly anti-black. It is mostly oriented against what they see as the intrusion of the federal government into the battles against integration in the South. What I'm looking at is a more ideologically diverse movement in the 1980s that brought together people who had been in the Third Klan with a whole bunch of other people. So what I'm looking at is the unification of Klansmen, neo-Nazis, radical tax protesters, people who follow white supremacist theologies, and later skinheads into a cohesive movement organized around the story of the Vietnam War. The important thing about that organization is that it is it's different in character from the Third Klan in that it is organized through a model of leaderless resistance, meaning what we now think of as cell-style terrorism. The idea is that you can organize a smaller number of activists in cells such that they can't be infiltrated or effectively prosecuted.
And would the Bible of that then be the Turner Diaries? Or?
Yes, absolutely. The Turner Diaries is a utopian novel that's published in serial in 1974 and then comes out in paperback a few years later that lays out how a strategy like this could work to take on the highly militarized superstate that is the United States in the late 1980s and 90s.
Professor Ballou, you write about this pivotal event in 1979, the shooting of communist protesters in Greensboro, North Carolina, the unified paramilitary and white power movement activists. Can you explain what happened then?
Yes, this is an event that happened in Greensboro in which a group of neo-Nazis and Klansmen came together under the name United Racist Front, drove to an anti-Klan demonstration that had been organized by a leftist group and some other activists in the area, and opened fire on protesters. They killed five people, four white men and one African-American woman. And even though this entire event was caught on multiple angles of news cameras who were on the scene, all of the gunmen were acquitted in state and federal trials, and a civil trial a few years later returned a decision that only one of the deaths had been wrongful. So the Greensboro massacre really gives us a historical cognate for Charlottesville in that we see a unified group of neo-Nazis and Klansmen, and they are naming themselves as a unified movement, the United Racist Front. They're coming to a public altercation, and violence ensues in the confrontation. In the case of Greensboro, it also shows us a lot of things about how the American legal system was broadly unprepared to reckon with this kind of violence, because the gunmen were able to sort of effectively say that what they were doing was not racist, was anti-communist. The trials failed in part because of jury instructions that said to make conspiracy charges to deprive someone of their civil rights for reasons of race, that it didn't work out because they were able to say it wasn't about racism, it was about anti-communism. And this went as far as the defendants posing in front of the local Vietnam War Memorial to raise money for their defense. and the acquittals sort of gave the green light for further violence in this mode.
And the title of your book, Bring the War Home, why you chose it?
Sure. That actually comes from an essay from a collection written by Louis Beam, who is a Vietnam veteran who served two tours as a Huey helicopter gunner and then returned home in 1968 and became a leader in this movement. And that essay, it's from an essay in a collection called Essays of a Klansman, which was published at the Aryan Nations compound in 1983 and then reissued in 1989. And in it, what Beam is talking about is the disconnect between the violence of warfare and the violence, or the violent experience of veterans when they come home. And his solution is to bring the violence of warfare into the domestic space. He says, Vietnam, bring it on home.